Welcome. Now, my name's Dee Ludlow. Now, before we get into this episode, go to the description, click the link, and get your M&A Mastery Toolkit. This is a free download which gives you some of the tools and resources that you need to start your M&A journey. Don't forget, go to the description, click the link. It's a free download, and enjoy the episode.
Awesome. So we are live. So, Ben, pleasure to have you back on the 5am podcast. Look, every time I speak to you, you're scaling up, and I know you scaled up again and again, whether it's a 5am presentation or a podcast, every time I speak to you, you've taken on more units. So I got loads of questions for you. Definitely want to talk around the scaling quickly, and you know, I think it'll probably help some people that are either on the fence right now or some people who may be a bit worried. So firstly, you know, like I said, you scaled super quick. So what's your contingency plan if plan A doesn't work? Like, what's the plan B? Is there one?
That's a really good question. I suppose, yeah, I'll give you short and long answers, but no, there isn't really. It's shoot for the stars, mate. Honestly, that's kind of where we're at. I mean, yeah, I don't really believe in plan B. I do believe in kind of like protection, like diversifying sort of the business streams and stuff. So it's not kind of completely like I've thrown everything in one track, and if that fails, I've got nothing. We are actively kind of moving this year in terms of sort of moving some of our finance into physical assets and stuff and different businesses. So we are kind of limiting our liability. We're not literally got everything in one place. But no, in terms of sort of scaling our business, no, really, there isn't a plan B. There isn't like an option of oh, let's scale it back and kind of get rid or kind of sell on or anything like that. We just want to grow and grow and grow. And really kind of like, yeah, our forward thinking now is we grow our core business here. We kind of use, it's obviously a famous book that everyone knows, most people should know, the E-Myth. And a principle of that is even if you're not considering franchising your business, you should basically be working and making your business that streamlined that it is franchisable. So we're kind of using those principles. But my honest kind of outlook for this year is I'd like to actually start offering a franchise of what we do later in the year as part of that scaling, but also for a little bit of safety. So yeah, there's just basically, yeah, one big plan, which is to forge ahead, mate.
Yeah, well, obviously you're doing very well at it. So how many units do you want, like as far as service accommodation goes? So I know you're like branching out now into commercial and other things as well. And obviously the coaching too, we'll talk about all of this, but is it like a certain amount of units you want before you start like diversifying even further into different streams of property or?
It's a really good question. I suppose no is the honest answer. I haven't got like an upward limit. I actually just want to increase the rate at which we pull stuff on. I mean, we started off on the individual unit model, so houses and apartments, which is really grateful for, because literally doing that is what got us in, let us cut our teeth, and it's literally changed my life. But really we're at the point now where it's all about bigger deals where we can just take on 50 units, 60 units kind of in a go. I suppose the better objective for me at the moment is I want to systemize those parts of businesses. So I reckon a couple of months away from the point where I've got deal sources working in my business, finding deals. I've got investor people that can kind of deal with our investors so they can put the deals to them. But in short, I'm kind of pulling myself out of the whole process and the business is starting to build itself now, which is really nice to see. Like there's new units coming on the board. And I was literally on our YouTube channel yesterday. I was like, oh, that's a nice property. Literally know nothing about it. Like just the whole thing's happened now without my involvement. So the plan is really to keep the business scaling there. I'll concentrate on kind of shuffling in the bigger deals. And then a few months from now, hopefully I'll start systemizing that. So again, I can kind of move away from that. I mean, our end state really is that I want to be building apartment blocks and hotels. And then I potentially want to be offering them out to franchisees. So we kind of, the way it works is we offer them out for straight rent to people around the country, maybe the world even better. And then we put a franchisee partner in there as well. So we kind of get someone that we trusted and trained to sort of manage it. And then we just, that's the end state I want to work towards.
So obviously franchising, you definitely have scope to franchise what you've done. Does that mean you can have to sort of, like you've taken over the south, like sort of west and Wales. So does that mean you're going to try not to personally go into other areas like Birmingham, London, and are you going to franchise in those areas, or are you going to sort of do that yourself first and then offer a franchise option?
That's a really good question. There's a few more areas I'd like to grow my business specifically. So London, you've kind of obviously put the nail on the head. I mean, London's a big old place, so we can kind of like have regions, break that down into regions anyway. But for obvious reasons, I've noticed a trend looking back at other operators who've started and grown quite quickly. And some of them end up in London because the reality is, once you go there, obviously the principles are the same, but just the numbers are bigger. And there's a lot, if you do it right, you can obviously sort of do very well there. So now, kind of some of the capital cities like London, Edinburgh, places like that, I definitely kind of want to do ourselves. But equally, then other locations where the model will still work perfectly, I'd be happy to basically work with franchisees to kind of move our model elsewhere.
Have you thought as of I know it's early days, but have you thought about global as well? Because there's the fact that you've done this over and over and over again now, that the model 100% works for you. So yeah, there's definitely scope to do it in other countries. I know there may be different rules or the way they do it, but yeah, is that something that has crossed you and your business partner's mind?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you're entirely right. It's we work with a lot of investors who invest in this model here in the UK, because actually this model doesn't work due to regulations where they live. So it's not something you can roll out everywhere, but 100%. I know, even if, for example, in the States, a lot of people do exactly what we do. There's a couple of guys I track there who are doing sort of big things, but I think there's scope to go over the water with this model. There are other places in Europe that it kind of works for. We are kind of getting more and more into the hospitality sector. That I kind of started our business on a business to business model, which has kind of helped us get through the last year. But equally, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say no to sort of trying to expand out into sort of some fancy hotels and casinos and stuff like that, and sort of, yeah, the proper hotel chain side of things. So yeah, that'd be quite nice to have a few heads down under the belt.
Yeah, so talking about the hotel, you've just taken on a hotel. We were just talking about it just before we jumped on. And what have you learned? You've obviously been in this space for a long time, but I suppose there's a lot to learn actually when you take on a full hotel. So what have you learned going into something that big?
Well, it's a completely different type of project, and I mean, it's got its positives and negatives. Positives are, actually, the biggest hotel we've taken on recently is 61 bedrooms, and yeah, there's obviously a lot to do, but actually, compared to taking on a comparable amount of individual units, it's so much quicker. So we've actually set this hotel up in about 6 weeks. It takes us 2 weeks to set up an apartment in comparison. So the economies of scale were huge, so much more efficient, and actually kind of more enjoyable as well. You've also got the advantages, for example, like when people are setting up apartments, you've got block management companies, you've got neighbors, you've got leasehold restrictions, you've got all this bureaucracy and kind of red tape that might make things more difficult. When it's a hotel and it's the freehold and it is what it is, there isn't really any of that. It's just kind of, there's lots a lot simpler. So in that regard, it's kind of easier. Also, taking on big projects like that, I am not a hotelier. I literally, when we got the hotel deal signed, I went and Googled how to run a hotel, because I've never run a hotel in my life. That's kind of where I was at. But then I kind of didn't, after about 10 minutes, like, what am I doing? And we just went and got the expertise on board. And that's the other thing you can do when you take a big project on. We went and got a manager. We went and got a housekeeper. We've got them, just basically got people that can do a job way better than we can in. They're now setting the hotel up for us. So we're obviously managing it to a degree, but we're relatively hands off even in the setup. So that's another positive. In terms of the negatives, everything's got an extra zero on the end. Everything seems to cost £1,200. Every form of compliance, I don't know what it is, but it's just for example, like a contract to look after the fire alarm system, CCTV, everything's £1,200. I kid you not. So obviously all those numbers add up, and there's a lot more compliance, quite rightly. But like, we've entered the world now of health and safety. One of the, we weren't in the world of health and safety, but there's a lot more kind of official compliance and trainings. So all the staff had to go through like a week of training and all the bits and pieces. So yeah, there's a whole loads of bits and pieces. But what I will say, service accommodation, due to the fact it is a relatively new strategy, there's not really much in the terms of compliance and regulations yet. But actually now, what we've learned by stepping into a far more established industry is that all of these bits of compliance, we're going back to our SA business, and we're actually improving ourselves above the standard we need to be at, because now as a business, we're going to be that much more comfortable that, yeah, we're completely bulletproof because we're well above the expected standards. So that's actually really helped. But no, we learned a lot taking it on genuinely. Like, we've kind of been on a crash course in like how to set up a hotel, and that we're really confident now that actually we can continue to do this because we've taken a lot of notes. We kind of built a manual essentially out of what we learned. And when it comes to taking on more units now, we're going to know a lot more when we go in and sort of walk around in terms of what we're going to assess price-wise, and what is and isn't a deal. And then when we take the next ones on, hopefully it'll just be a lot easier and quicker. So yeah, been really enjoyable, but a lot to learn.
Yeah, I love what you said about, rather than sort of try to learn the ins and outs and all the intricate things that you needed to, you just employed an expert to do it. And I think that when scaling in business, it's quite important to sort of you do what you're best at have the base knowledge on it so you understand it, but then also find the right people to do it and get the job done. And talking about that, you've expanded your team massively now because of the hotel. But even before this, I've been to your office and you already had a big team. So, the reason why I want to make this point is because, people who are coming into the service accommodation space, yeah, you can do a certain amount yourself, sort of a one-man band or a JV. But then you, even early on, when you started scaling, you already had quite a few people involved in your team. So what would you say to people who's either in service accommodation right now or want to go into service accommodation? When it comes to team, at what level do you think people need to be taking on staff to efficiently scale up the correct way?
I got some really good advice early on, and that was to basically get people on as quickly as you could. And the way we in which we did that is when we had one unit, we started hiring for our first employee, as it were. We went for a virtual assistant, somebody to help us with kind of admin online, and obviously relatively low overheads. And that was really good. And I say to people now, we took them a month on into our business. We should have taken them on pretty much 2 months before we even got a unit, because we learned far more getting somebody on board to basically task and train, et cetera. We learned more doing that than we actually kind of like, yeah, got arguably, but that was really massive in itself. And so from there, we sort of started to build the team. And again, really kind of when we started, I think we got our first unit in November. It took us about another sort of 2 or 3 months to even get like two more units. So we were quite a slow start, but it's no coincidence that at the point where we suddenly went from sort of taking on a unit a month to like 10 in a month was at the exact same point where we went, this isn't working, us putting together the furniture. And we suddenly went, nope, we're going to take a designer on. We're going to get some people in self-employed to kind of help sort of put stuff up together. And suddenly that's just where it exploded. So I'd say, yeah, it depends what your end state is. And exactly as you said, if you want a bit of a kind of a side hustle, you want a lifestyle business, nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But it's kind of going back to kind of the cliche, start with the end in mind. If on the other hand, you want a business, something that you can step away from, and trust me, service accommodation, there's a lot of going on all the time. If you don't work hard to get yourself out of the business, you're never going to. You'll be on the phone every day of the week. So yes, start with that in mind. If you start building the teams and getting the right people in, yeah, it's perfectly doable, but you've not got to be scared of that. I mean, there are ways you can kind of tip your toe in the water. So virtual assistants are very low cost way to start doing that. Working with people that are self-employed, to so kind of individual gigs, is great again because there's no liability. And then when you want to really take that leap, and I mean, for us, it was a big leap when we actually registered an employer. We then actually initially took on people on 0 hour contracts just to give us that flexibility. And now we kind of built up to the point where we got majority of the people sort of with us are full time. But yeah, I know, I think quite rightly, a lot of people are scared taking on employees. And yeah, genuinely we were. I mean, it's a big old commitment. You're like paying people's rent, people's mortgages. You have a significant impact on people's lives. But equally, on the flip side, you are paying their rent and mortgages if you get it right. So you're giving back as well. So yeah, I think, yeah, if you want to go big, you've got to get your head around getting people on board, stepping away and managing, leading them. But even then, managing is probably, you don't even want to be doing that. Your end state wants to be as soon, well, not an end state, but by the medium term, you want to get managers in that actually do the managing. So you really only have a handful of people you need to delegate to, because that's another thing. You might be tempted to get a big team on, but be managing every single one of them. And that then means you've got literally no free time left after that.
Yeah. So what would you say to people that are sort of in the situation where they want to scale up, but they're worried to take sort of the leap of actually becoming an employer because for one, they feel that they can't take as much out as they want anymore. What would you say to somebody on the fence a little bit about taking that step?
The future of work is constantly shifting. How can HR leaders stay on top of the latest trends to better lead their global workforce to success? Serva Soundbites podcast explores current trends and the hottest topics around global employee relocation and the future of work. We connect with industry experts, HR leaders, and innovative thinkers to share their insights and stories. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your business podcasts.
Well, it depends what you want. You're not going to, I mean, Bill Gates doesn't put his computers together, does he? It's pretty much as simple as that. It's if you want to go big, if you want a business that's going to grow, you've got to get your hands out of it. You've got to let go to grow, I think is another phrase. But it's a really powerful feeling because just to give you a bit of context, my background, sort of 12 years in the public sector, I genuinely had the mindset of I'm the best at what I do. That literally was where I was. I was like proud of how good I was at my job, but I wasn't very good at delegating, and I only kind of learned that skill towards the end of my time in the public sector. But now it's a whole other feeling when you have set a system up to the point where you don't really have much involvement in it. And then you go in and stuff's just happened, like almost by magic, and you've not said anything, you've not had any involvement, and just a property set itself up, or there's a process in place. And yeah, it's really, yes, really rewarding. In terms of sort of a mindset thing for me, the way I kind of rejigged it in my brain, my mind now, and this isn't like me getting my violin out here, but if there's something wrong in the business, or something's not going right, or somebody's not working the right way, ultimately that is my fault. That's my fault for not putting the right processes in place and the right people in place. So it's not so much a case of I'm better at it and I should be the one doing it. I just need to figure out the way to get the people doing it. We'll give them the tools or the training so they can do it better. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. So when it comes to, we spoke last week briefly on the whole, the SA mortgages and stuff and where they was going on the 5am club. And so yeah, what's your thoughts around this? Obviously we spoke about sort of premature it is at the moment, but would you, some of your sort of mentees and stuff, the ones that maybe don't want to do the rent to rent stuff, they want to buy and sort of turn them into SAs himself. Is that something that you're sort of, your opinion is leaning more towards to advise them to do, or are you more conservative about the whole service accommodation mortgage?
Yes, yeah, really good question. I mean, from where we're at, we've got a fair few investments ourselves from rent to rent, but this year our priorities are, I don't even know if I'll take personally any more rent to rents on this year. I'm pretty much throwing all of our capital now into purchasing assets. Main reason being is more exits, fundamentally. If we have a house, we deck it out, and for whatever reason SA ever stops working, we can just go back to single let, nice and easy. We're also kind of doing buy, refurbish, refinance. We're just taking on a nice apartment at the moment. Well, actually not nice, that's the whole point. It needs a bit of work, but it will be nice. And then through that, we've obviously added enough value that if we wanted to, we could just, not that I want to sell it, but we're going to do a BRR with a mortgage. Yeah, I agree, the mortgage industry for service accommodation is pretty much in its infancy, but there are some pretty good brokers out there who can still get you access to a wide range of products. And I think in terms of timing where we are now, broadly speaking, the products have been pretty responsive. So even in between the lockdowns, a load more products have suddenly just reappeared. And I think it's quite a poignant time now. Touch wood, there's quite a positive outlook for service accommodation coming up this year. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, but there's even like literally a news article I shared like 10 minutes before our live. Apparently, well, we've seen it ourselves, but there are so many bookings now for the summer at really good rates for people that have kind of got enough confidence now that staycations are going to be allowed. Holidays in the UK are going to be a thing. At the end of the day, is the banks aren't stupid. They're kind of in the position they are with managing billions and trillions of pounds, because when they see an angle, when they see an opportunity, and when they see the risk decrease enough, they're going to come back. And so I think we'll be, relatively speaking, soon in a place where there'll be some very competitive service accommodation products. And they'll only be a little bit more in terms of sort of percentage than the residential stuff. But when you sort of look at the amount of cash flow that you can make in comparison to them, actually, yeah, the extra cost is more than offset by the extra cash flow. And on top of that, there are some really compelling tax advantages to service accommodation, which basically just make the whole thing even better anyway. So no, I'm relatively confident in that space. And there are already products. That's the thing. It's not like no one can get mortgages now. You're just basically going to have to jump for a few more hoops. You might need, say, a year's worth of traditional landlord experience under your belt. That's quite a common requirement. But if you've kind of got those bits and pieces in place and also got a bit of track record in service accommodation, then yeah, the stuff's there already, and I think there'll be even more later in the year.
Yeah, it's crazy because I did a presentation I don't know, probably about 6-7 months ago about obviously the UK property market, and people asked me what I think was sort of the best strategies for the future, especially for the next 12 to 24 months. And even though I was talking about the hospitality and tourism sector being pretty much demolished, and I'm not sure when that's fully going to come back to where it was, and I still feel the same way, but one of the strategies I thought would work at coming at the back of COVID was service accommodation locally. And the reason why I thought this was because, like you just said, when people do come out of lockdowns and stuff, you know, a lot of countries are going to start saying, look, we want vaccine passports, that's freedom of movement's a bit harder now. So I think that
people having to quarantine to come back to the UK. It's like, I would love to go on holiday, but I don't want to spend 10 days at a Holiday Inn when I come back. So at the moment, I'm not even considering it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that if anything, this is great for service accommodation in the UK. Being an SA operator is going to be better than it's ever been, hopefully, when people start you know, coming out of lockdowns and stuff like that. So I think that, yeah, I'm fully bullish on the sector when people come out, because look, people aren't going to quarantine, like you just said. People aren't going to want to pay to quarantine. And, you know, so I think that it's going to be more appealing to, you know, look for service accommodations, even more than hotels, some for some people in different areas around the UK, and sort of check them out as well. So yeah, what do you think you're doing differently to others right now? Because I do see a lot of people talking about how they are struggling, especially with service accommodation, which I 100% got no doubt that's happening, because, you know, I'm not obviously into SA like you are, but I've seen Airbnb cancelled a lot of bookings, and these different sort of companies were doing. So how, what have you done differently to others to maintain strength and to scale?
Yeah, well, I'll give you a couple of perspectives here. So one from like a personal business perspective, we predominantly do management, similar to a letting agent, but obviously for service accommodation. The basic principle of that is we don't rent or pay for the properties. So we're a lot less leveraged. Doesn't mean there isn't a risk, and I'll go on to that in a second. But clearly from the sort of balance sheet perspective, we've not got a lot of rents going out, which is our biggest liability, staff by far and beyond. So that's kind of where we are in terms of giving our business more strength and continuity going forward. But in terms of sort of overall how the sort of strategy for SA is working for us, I mean, by accident, we started our business here in sunny Newport, not the most cosmopolitan place on the planet, as you are more than aware, Dee. We could have gone somewhere a bit more obvious, holiday country like Dorset or something, or we could have gone like big cities like Bristol, Cardiff, London. These are the places that, especially during the lockdowns, really, really suffered. We were quite lucky that we made the decision. We want to go somewhere where there's a less pronounced hospitality sector, but there's more business to business stuff. And we were lucky that kind of translated into key workers in the lockdowns. I mean, some of our places, Newport, for example, was outshone everywhere else we've invested over the last year by far and beyond. We've maintained at least 70% occupancy in Newport over the whole year, which is bonkers. I mean, I think that sort of projects pretty well for this year, fingers crossed, if there aren't any more lockdowns. Doesn't mean we haven't got stuff in other places, and that we have had units that have struggled, like Cardiff, for example. For us, most of last year was a real struggle, unfortunately. It's starting to come back now, which is really positive to see. But it's just being honest with the investors. I mean, at the end of the day, we heavily reliant on the investors. I mean, hats off to them, massive thanks to all the people that kind of trust us and want to work with us. But we do our best to basically say, look, this is the opportunity. And for example, now we've got investors investing in places like Cardiff that are quite high risk, but equally I think quite high reward now, because it's like, look, mate, if you get these units out, potentially hold your own for 2 or 3 months, and then things are really going to come back, and you're going to be in a sector where there's massive demand and limited supply. So I think it's just that, for that, it's been a lot of working with really good people, trying to find them the best investments to sort of get them through the last year, but equally now kind of trying to find more opportunities for them. So yeah, I suppose that's kind of like how we've grown, but also kind of how we've been able to do it, just by working with other people, being honest, but equally helping them during the sort of the darker days to invest in the areas that are more resistant, and having really good relationships with our guests. I believe we provide a very good product at a very compelling price. And a lot of people ask me like, yeah, how do you get good reviews? And like, as if there's like a magic trick, but I can normally answer that. Like, just if you provide a good service, you're probably on the right track. And it's almost like you should be thinking more about providing a good service than you should be thinking about getting good reviews. Because the good service will get you the good reviews, instead of you thinking, is there a hack where I can offer them a voucher for, £10 Amazon vouchers to leave a review? No, just give them a good service and they'll probably do that anyway. Yeah, I suppose that's about it. Anything from that, mate?
Yeah. So when it comes to, you know, based on the article you posted just before, I did start to read it just before we jumped on. What's sort of your forecast for service accommodation from, I don't know when the lockdowns are looking to sort of lift, but what's your forecast for the rest of the year for service accommodation?
Yeah, so well, let's just go back in time very briefly. So last year, in the UK, we had a staycation quote unquote boom. So around August, September, there was a period where things went mental for about a month. Like all of our stuff was full, like insanely full. We were charging nearly, well, in probably in some areas more than double our normal rates, and people were happily paying them. And we had higher occupancy as well. So literally we were sort of generating about 2.5 times the amount of turnover per unit from compared to a couple of months previous. That kind of died after the summer holidays. And also when the moment there was even an inkling another lockdown was coming in, literally that just disappeared overnight. So that's very interesting. I think we're going to see that again this year, but I don't think it's going to be for a month. I think it's just going to be a decent period of that, touch wood, as long as the sort of things go in the right direction. In terms of dates, I mean, I always said my birthday is actually March the 31st, sort of end of the tax year, start of the new one. And I thought like a nice birthday present would be the beginning of April, things would kick back in. Now, as it currently stands, the Welsh government have said that essentially they want hospitality back open for Easter. They're not like 100% confirmed, but they say bar any major issues, that's going to happen. So April 8th, I think things are really going to tick up here in Wales. I think England is being a little bit more cautious, but only by a couple of weeks. So I think by late April, England will probably be in a similar position. So April's going to be an uptick. May, I think, will get really positive. And by the time we hit June, I think, touch wood, all bets will be off. Service accommodation and just hospitality in general in the UK will be in a really good place. And if there aren't going to be any more lockdowns, but there's still going to be a lot of caution in terms of, as you were saying, loads of measures in place to try and stop people coming into the UK and obviously bringing new strains and all that kind of stuff, then the only option people are going to have is to stay in the UK. And that probably is going to translate into the winter period as well, because a lot of people want to get away for the winter, but they're not going to want those obvious issues. They're not going to want the sort of obvious restrictions on travel. So their only option is either to not go anywhere or just find somewhere else in the UK. So we might even see people like going on holiday even when it's wet and miserable, which I think is really positive.
What sort of like SA regulations do you think people should be expecting from your point of view?
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
I think regulation's coming. I just don't see it coming even this year, to be honest. I think the people are sort of, I mean, you asked me this question on our sort of the very first podcast, and I think even then I'll give you the same answer, to be honest, because back then it was, Brexit. Brexit's too busy keeping everyone busy. Brexit's still a thing now for obvious reasons, keeping a lot of legislators busy. And we've got a pandemic to deal with. And in all fairness, the government can't, in my opinion, be seen to be putting any more brakes on the hospitality industry after the year it's had. I mean, they literally, to be shown to be sort of causing more issues there would be pretty hot, or wouldn't go down very well, in my opinion. So I think legislation will come. I don't think it'll come even in 2021. I think you might see some localized legislation, kind of a 90-day rule kind of things in some of the more established cities. I mean, you've got sort of rumors of it in Bristol, for example. I know Edinburgh have imposed some bits and pieces. For anyone that doesn't know, 90-day rule in short basically means that if you've got SA units, you can only potentially market them for 90 days a year, which is clearly quite a stringent sort of thing to have in place. But by and large, I still think at the moment it's going to take a long time before regulation does catch up. And even when it does, if you're doing service accommodation well, I think it's actually going to be a positive, personally, because I think you just basically up your game to the point where you comply, and then actually people that are only in it sort of with a handful of units or don't want to sort of rise up will actually be filtered out. So I say bring it on, personally.
Yeah, I agree. I think regulation's good for all types of industry, really. So
yeah.
Also, look, the coaching side of stuff's become huge for you as well. You know, you become very well known, if not one of the most well known, I would say, in the UK. I think it's you know, it's done very well. So the SA Club, can you give us a little bit of a breakdown of the SA Club and what your where you want to take it?
Yeah, of course. No, it's been really interesting getting into this space, and it's quite humbling last year. Like, I had a sort of goal and roadmap of where I wanted to go in my businesses. And I had, like, getting into training and education was like year three. To be honest, I didn't even consider doing it until then. The last year I had people just approaching me, asking to mentor them, to coach them and train them. And it was like, I thought, you know what? Well, I believe very strongly the market tells you what it wants. And literally, there was kind of a lot of people saying that. So I put out my coaching service. I think I did two Facebook posts on my personal page and basically got as many clients as I wanted from that. It's been really interesting. So I think actually my 6-month coaching package I was offering, and it's coming to an end now for a lot of them. So it's been a really interesting ride. I'm very proud of all of the sort of people I've been coaching have actually got units under their belt and have actually built businesses, which is a really nice feeling. But in terms of where I want to go with it, I think now I'm going to be looking to a model where we start to do training events, hopefully kind of here in Wales at our office at some point. I'm probably going to step away from the one-to-one coaching because just perfectly honest, I haven't got the time. I kind of like to think that I'm kind of a trainer that walks the walk as well as talking the talk. And I've got a lot and that much going on in my businesses that I can't dedicate all my time to just doing training and kind of putting my business on ice, because actually I want to grow my business. But we're going to look at using models whereby we'll have more of a kind of a mastermind feel. I'm going to want to bring my business partner, Chris, in, because actually he's been a little bit in the shadows, but he's slowly coming out of it now. You've probably seen the odd posts of him and stuff on social media, but he's got a lot more value to add, because me and him are literally yin and yang. We're very different personalities, and that's actually a good thing in terms of business, but equally in terms of what he can give, because he does more of the operations. I do more of the kind of blue sky thinking and dreaming, basically. So it's kind of good to get those balanced views. And yeah, I like to do a mastermind, get people sort of down here, and then sort of do more regular training events. In terms of what I think is missing in the service accommodation training space, a lot of the training is very just rent to rent focused, and it's quite sort of 2-day courses, which are great and you can learn a lot. And rent to rent literally is what got me started. I don't think anyone really hammers on the service accommodation management. So I don't think there's really much service accommodation management specific training, which I think we arguably have got the background now to train people in. And kind of combining deal sourcing as well. So my business now actively sources deals, rent to rent and purchase and hotels for investors to kind of invest in service accommodation. And I think if I could go back now in time, we were very lucky that we kind of stumbled into managed service accommodation management. I think if we'd actively started sourcing stuff at the beginning, we would have actually been able to grow quicker and it would have protected us further had we done that as well. So that's something I'm teaching my current client set to do. And something, again, I want to weave into sort of any future training we do, both online and in person. I mean, obviously we'll move with the time, so we will offer stuff online. And I suppose the sort of final thing I want to tease out of it as well is, because we want to franchise our business, naturally part of franchising is you teach people how to do stuff. So we can literally get people to the point that if they want to come and train with us, depending on the package they want, they could literally go through the package and become a franchisee at the end. So if they want kind of the easiest is the right word, but kind of giving themselves arguably the best chance of success possible, if they can come in, get trained by us, and then get to use our systems and our branding to set up their own service accommodation business, I think that the whole thing comes really well together.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. You know, for someone, it's an opportunity on a plate if they're serious. You know, if this, you know, a lot of people take training and don't take action. But yeah, so what do you think? Not just in the service accommodation space, what do you think is missing from? Because look, a lot of these education companies have had no choice but to adapt to what's going on. You know, there's been no rooms to sell in. There is a lot different now, and I've seen a few of them that are sort of lagged behind and wasn't ready for this, and still today haven't adapted to going online officially. What do you think is missing from the actual property education space? Because you know, you're not only SA, you know, you're doing other things in the space in property too. So what do you think is missing?
Well, the thing I got, and I think it's not scalable in some regards, but the feedback I got from a lot of my coaching clients, the ones I'm working with at the moment, is every single week. And there isn't really much of an offering like that. Now, obviously you need more people to kind of deliver that, but I think people going on courses for sort of 2 days and then kind of feeling like that's the whole lot. I think actually, if you're going to really get involved, I think companies offering like a more, not handholding, but just that ongoing mentorship and support, I think is a lot more important, kind of an access to a portal where you kind of get an up-to-date documentation, that kind of thing. Yeah, there's a lot in there in terms of ongoing support. In terms of other strategies, because yeah, we are diving into other strategies. Supported living is a massive growth space. So I see so many people making loads of noises about that. There's definitely opportunity there for somebody to come out with a really good course, because I'm not really aware of anyone. I know there's a few mentors sort of kicking about, but yeah, I mean, yeah, feel free to steal that idea of somebody else, because it's not my strategy. But I think you could definitely, the right person with the right background could go in there and make a very sort of unprofitable set of training, as long as it's good, obviously. In terms of other pieces, yeah, it's a good question. I suppose for me, what I've learned, and I kind of, yeah, done a lot, I made a lot of mistakes, but equally I went and spent a lot of money on training, and I trained myself in every strategy. And now weirdly that's coming back now, because we're pretty much not, I wouldn't say we're doing every strategy, but all the training I've done has been useful now, realistically. Like, we're looking at doing commercial projects, I've done commercial conversion training, we're doing residential stuff, I've done like single lets, I've done HMO, buy, refurbish, refinance, I've done all of these bits and pieces. And so again, maybe some sort of blended training as well, maybe not just sort of one specific strategy, because I kind of do believe in niching and specializing, but equally I think you shouldn't at some point you should start to kind of like spread your bets a little bit, diversify. And once you've got one system going, plug another one in, because properties, there's so much overlapping knowledge. And once you've really hammered one niche, it's not that hard to jump to another one. And it kind of all supports itself anyway. I'll give you an example here. So because now that we're getting into residential, I want to set up a letting agent. That letting agent will naturally attract tenants and landlords. The landlords may have properties that are good for serviced accommodation. And if they are correct, we can obviously put that to them, potentially take that as a deal, source that onto one of our investors. So we've already got residential deal sourcing, then bang it onto our serviced accommodation stream. And by sort of understanding all of those sectors intimately, we've kind of, basically managed to generate a huge opportunity there for ourselves.
Yeah, that's amazing. And when you mentioned that, you know, you've got some big plans and you've done a lot of the strategies already, what's your reason for now sort of branching out more now? Do you believe it's because you wanted to niche down first and then sort of generalize across others? Is that sort of what your plan was originally?
Yeah, I mean, during the sort of initial training I did, I come across a concept, or was taught a concept of 70-20-10 rule. And the idea is you put 70% of your effort into one, 20% of your effort into something else, and 10% into another. But the idea was to get the 70% to the point where it was relatively systemized and working on itself. Then you kind of semi-put that on the shelf. Your 20% would become your 70, and you basically shuffle through. And that's what we're doing now. Not because I think we want to lack focus and clarity, and we're really going to keep hammering serviced accommodation. But if you can do another business that supports the core business, I think that's a positive. So for example, I'm not going to plan to get into selling stuff on Amazon tomorrow, because that pretty much doesn't relate. That's a kind of whole new theme, a whole kind of stuff, different thing to do. But if you can set up associated businesses, and the other obvious one is the SA Club for us, doing that supports our other serviced accommodation businesses, and the two feed each other, then you're actually kind of spreading your bets, mitigating the risk. If something terrible were to happen in one company, things went the wrong way, at least you've got the others. But equally, the two kind of support each other. So I think it's actually, if you do it the right way, you're actually strengthening the overall business structure, as opposed to kind of weakening yourself through diversifying and sort of spreading your attention too far.
Oh, definitely. Also, you mentioned sort of the, not so much handholding, but sort of the access, because we were talking about the coaching and once they've done the 2-day course, is sort of, I don't want to like put any companies down, but the aftercare isn't great. Usually you're left to do a lot of it on your own. I know there's mentorships that can be taken on, but I think that, do you think that's probably the main reason why, look, so many people do property courses, but not everyone takes action? Do you think that's the reason? Do you think because some people can't get over like a mental barrier of going out there and do it themselves? What do you think's missing there, and what do you think could be done better for people?
Yeah, well, I'm not saying that the mentorship's literally the only thing as well. I think people need to have a bit of a word with themselves as well, because one thing I'm massive on and probably really helped me is I'm sort of self-development junkie. And so I spend as much, if not more, time working on myself than I do on just quote-unquote reading stuff about planning laws and tax and that kind of thing. I think for anyone that's looking to get into business in general, or if they want to go into serviced accommodation, I spend as much time working on yourself as I would on learning about sort of service accommodation, because there are going to be bad days. We've had great dark days that we've had issues. I mean, at the end of the day, you kind of distill what an entrepreneur is or what they do. They solve problems. And if you haven't got a bit of a thick skin and you've kind of unprepared to sort of wake up some days and have some pretty big problems to deal with and some things that are going to sort of upset you, then that's kind of that. Equally, you're going to have dizzying highs as well. So I think to even begin, before you put any money down, you've really, really got to put yourself in a position where you want to go for it 100%. Because there's no point even doing the 2-day course if it's just kind of like a shelf development, couple of days and see what it's all about. I mean, it's fine. If that's what you want to do, great. But don't go there thinking you're going to get handed 2 days worth of training and then it's going to all be on a plate. You can improve your chances of success by then getting good coaching or mentoring. But again, that's not a guarantee by any means. Ultimately, you've got to do it. I suppose my answer partly to your question is, if you want to really increase your chance of success, and that's where I see the bit of the angle here, potentially we can offer, or other people offer a credible franchise system. I mean, you can't really get much more handholding or kind of extra steps of success there, because then you're going to have a business telling you how to build your business. So does that make sense? And I think that's kind of my answer, but I think ongoing self-development as well. So don't just like read 4 or 5 Tony Robbins books and think, job done. I'm back, bang up to rights for that. You really got to like work on yourself constantly alongside working on your business, because that will help you to basically get through the dark days.
And I think that's the flip side of what I just mentioned, is the fact that, you know, even if there isn't much aftercare there, you've gone there to develop yourself, like you just mentioned. And I think that a lot of people blame some of the education that they've done because they haven't become successful, when you're right. You know, I don't know of a course out there. Look, I haven't done all the courses, but I don't know a course out there that hasn't had success stories. So there's reasons why Every training company has success stories, and there's a reason why there's a lot of people that didn't become successful because maybe they didn't take action. So yeah, I totally agree. And it is an ongoing thing, regardless of how savvy you get in business or how well you're doing. If you don't continue to work, you will become complacent. It's just, that's just the way things is. So yeah, so look, I really appreciate your time today, Ben. The one thing I would like to ask before you go is, people that are coming into the space, it is something we spoke about before, but what sort of things would you be saying to them now if they, you know, if they, this is one of the first things they've ever heard about service accommodation? What would your advice be to give to somebody who's never heard of it before, maybe just heard of Airbnb?
What would I do? I'd learn up about it, and you don't have to spend any money. So it's not a pitch at all. There are some very good podcasts about service accommodation. There are some very good books that are, well, not free, but very cheap. You can learn a lot for not very much money at all to kind of make your, really give yourself the sort of best chance of going, you know what, is this what I want to do or not? If you get into it, you want to do it. You want to be doing so rather because you're not chasing the money. You actually like the idea and the business model. I'm a bit of a geek, so I like the business model, the systemization. I actually like the fact that with service accommodation, it's about providing a good product. And that's why I chose it maybe over some of the other property strategies, which are maybe more about kind of stack them high and sell them cheap, as it were. And then if you got, yeah, you can see yourself being passionate about it and throwing everything into it, then go for it. I do think you should get some training. I know people haven't done, you can do very well without it as well. So if you're lucky to get a mentor, coach, or et cetera. But yeah, I'm a big advocate of training. It massively helped me. I spent a lot of money, but I continue to do so now even more. I can't wait, in all fairness, for this current lockdown to end, because I've got loads of training courses and all sorts of things lined up to do. So I'm going to be kind of driving up the motorway all over the country once this is done. Yeah, if you want to go for it, go for it, and be sensible, but burn your bridges as well. I think your very first question was, what's your plan B? It's kind of, plan Bs are very dangerous, because plan B is normally the easy way out. So put yourself in a position, if you can, without sort of exposing yourself too much, where you just have the thing to work on and go for it. I think now's an incredible time to get started in service accommodation. We've still got a couple of months lag where they're still going to seem like the sky is falling down and everything's bad. And then if my kind of predictions are true, service accommodation is going to boom. And to be honest, you don't want to be kind of just getting into SA at that point, because everyone else, there'll be the gold rush will already be sort of be in progress. So I think if you're thinking about SA now, I wouldn't even start it now. I would have started a few months ago personally, but you can still get ahead of the game now if you're interested in it.
And you know, just before we wrap it up, you know, we've talked about scaling quickly quite a lot, and you know, that's sort of what you've done, but you've done it in a way that, like you said, you haven't fully exposed yourself. You haven't gone out there and just tried to just do everything as quick as you can. You've done it in a very good way. So how long has it taken you from starting to where you are now, and how many units have you managed to pick up over that period of time?
Good question. So we got our first unit in November 2019. I'd say really we started, in terms of like the actual growth, started in about now. And the reason I know that is because good old Facebook reminds you of where you are a year ago, and it's really quite nice now. I'm getting like the stuff now, it's just sort of showing when we started really kind of like growing. So in the last year, we kind of had our exponential growth, arguably. In terms of units, we're on, I think, just shy of 160 units now, between South Wales and South West England. And yeah, that's a combination of hotels, apartments, houses. I think there's a couple of B&Bs and bits and pieces in there as well. And yeah, so basically, just in over a year, we've done the majority of the work, and we've gone from sort of zero to 160 units.
That's amazing. And you know, that's just, listen, for anyone listening, that's what can be done with the correct knowledge and dedication. You need dedication, and it's amazing what you've done, mate. Seriously, like I said, every time we talk, when I asked you that then, I was expecting, like, so I remember you saying you hit 100, I was like 110 maybe now. To say you did 160, it wasn't long ago when I seen that post where you said I've hit 100, or you, the company's hit 100, and that's amazing that you've now acquired another 60 units. Unbelievable. But yeah, look, really appreciate your time, Ben. Obviously, I'm going to put everything in the show notes and when I post it, but where would you like most of the traffic, to people who's listening to this now, where would you like them to go?
Cool. You can find me on Facebook, Ben the Brand, or Instagram, Ben the Brand. Just please DM me on there. I mean, genuinely, if you're interested in getting a service accommodation, please send me a message. At a minimum, I'll point you towards all the kind of free stuff I put out, just so that you can go and have a look at that. If you're interested in investing in service accommodation, if you're interested in sort of, us managing your properties, if you want to work on us in hotels, we've got big plans. And if you want to be a part of it, then we'd love to hear from you. So yeah, DM me on Facebook or Insta and I'd love to talk to you.
Awesome. What about the SA Club? How can they find the SA Club? So I know you're giving loads of value out there as well.
Same thing, actually. It's a good point. Yeah, if you want to sort of get a feed for our content on there, SA Club on Facebook or on YouTube, join us on there. We've got a group on Facebook. We're putting out more and more content. And equally now, we've got the SA Club podcast. So please go check that out. Again, we're sort of really sort of ratcheting up the content. So genuinely, with the idea with all of those portals is just to provide as much good content for free as possible. So go on there and basically use it because it's there.
Definitely. Thanks very much for your time, mate. And look, continue to excel in what you're doing and we'll definitely have a catch up soon. And I'll see you on Wednesday anyway.
Yeah, see you on Wednesday, buddy. Thank you, Dean. Thanks for all the great stuff you're doing, mate. It's really, genuinely humbling to watch all the stuff you're doing. I get very jealous, in all fairness, mate, seeing you going around Dubai with expensive cars. It's like, like living the dream.
Always, mate. Nice one, Ben. Thanks very much, mate. I'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, Dean. Bye-bye.
Cheers, mate.